Right, intro music cue. Do 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 do. Webinars unfiltered. Doosh. Hi, and welcome back to Webinars Unfiltered, where we answer the questions that no one wants to say out loud in a meeting. I'm Emma, and I am the editorial content producer here at Workcast. And joining me today is our very own CEO, Stuart Kibbe, but we will call him Stu. Hi, Stu.
Hi there.
How are you feeling today? Are you excited, nervous?
Oh, excited. No, it's good. Excited. I'm looking forward to doing this.
Good, good. Before we do dive into the question today, we just want to kind of give you, as our audience, some information, some kind of housekeeping. So you can submit questions or comments at any time during our discussion today. You can do this via the question box on the right-hand side of the window. If we don't get time to answer your question today, we will have a look at that offline and get back to you. And we also have a resources section available on the right-hand side as well. So feel free to access the links and documents available to you. Now, today's question is a very, very interesting one. I'm going to read it out. So it says, our CEO is actually brilliant one-to-one. Genuinely good listener, great in small meetings, people love him. But the moment he gets in front of the whole company, it falls completely flat. Reads from slides, no energy, no one asks questions, it's like a different person. How do you fix that without telling your CEO they're boring?
Interesting question. Clearly this is put together about me.
Yeah. It looks like I've like done this in the meantime, but I promise. So yeah, it is a very, very interesting topic. Like, how can someone be so brilliant in a room of five and then completely fall apart when there's like 500? So starting off just nice and easy, I suppose, but what are your thoughts on this from a CEO perspective?
I mean, I think one of the things I'm always struck with, you know, Workcast for the last 15 years has been helping companies do large scale internal comms events. So we work with a lot of CEOs and we understand the challenge. The thing which is always apparent is none of us are actors or none of us are news presenters. You know, we find ourselves in these situations that we're not qualified for, because essentially you become a CEO by being quite good at your job and building your way up, or, you know, you don't get there typically coming from a background of being incredible in front of camera. You know, you go into politics, you go into television, if that's your skill set. So yeah, most CEOs or most, you know, leadership teams in companies, they're not natural communicators. So it is a learned skill that they have to put on top of the other things that they bring. And I think that's the starting point. And I think it actually helps to have that understanding of the starting point. You know, you're dealing with people who are amateurs in how to present. And the more they do it, the better they get and the stronger they get. But there's lots of different types of communication, you know, from you know, live filmed content to webcam stuff, as we're doing today. You know, being good at all of that is very, very difficult. So that's my kind of, that's the way I enter this conversation, really, is we're not coming from that being an amazing presenter background typically. So it's kind of, you've got to work with the tools, you've got to work with planning, you've got to make it work from that point of view.
Yeah, and we were literally just talking about this like 5 minutes ago before we started, to say it is so hard to get into the zone of like presenting and making sure that it's like, you just don't want to kind of fail, you want to make sure the right messages are given, and you can prep it for as long as you want, but sometimes being in front of the camera, it's just like and you can have that freeze. So as a CEO, I suppose when you're given like really important meetings that everyone needs to be crystal clear on, I guess it's that like kind of added pressure to that.
I think you've just made a really good point about prepping it. I think so much of this is in the preparation. Mm-hmm. You know, as with any presentation, you need to practice it, and you practice it out loud, and you just need to work on some of those basic areas.
Yeah.
I think what we see quite often is, and this is often because the messages that people want to do at a town hall, they're still being kind of formed right up to the 11th hour. And it's honestly true. It must be about 70% of the time the slides and the content is not finalized until about 10 minutes before that CEO goes live. Now, sometimes that's because there's confidential things in there, but you genuinely see situations where the person presenting it hasn't seen the slides. Now, that's the root of the problem in many ways, because if they had a little bit of time to practice and prep as you would do with normal presentations, then it would be significantly stronger more of the time. And I think that sometimes that last minute approach is often one of the challenges that people come up against. And it's, you're just asking normal people to do very, very difficult things. Here's something you've barely seen before. You've now got an audience of 5,000 people and you need to be charming, sophisticated, hit all the key points. It's a really tough ask. And that's what we often expect from our leadership teams in larger organizations.
Yeah, for sure. And like, would you say it's something that you've had to work on yourself to kind of, when you're leading these meetings, is it something you've had to work on to make sure everyone kind of leaves that meeting crystal clear from what you've said?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you're kind of starting from the premise that I know I'm good at this. You know, I think I make lots of mistakes. Sometimes I'm okay, sometimes I'm less okay. So, you know, I start from that position really. But yeah, I think, you know, through my career, I have worked on this in different ways. I was definitely, you know, going right back to just other presentations I've done. You know, I definitely wasn't great to begin with. I've definitely improved. There's a lot of improvement I can do from here, but it does take quite a bit. And I actually did, you know, so I've worked in the US and in the UK. And I think one of the things I saw in the US is people are naturally better speakers in the US. And I think that's the education system is much better at putting people on stage, making them present than certainly when I was in education in the UK. I think that's changed a little bit now. So I definitely felt like I was the weak link presenting in these leadership situations. So I did actually do quite a lot of work both at that time and when I came back to the UK. And I've done some interesting things. You know, I've probably done two or three presenting courses through my life. Some of them very business focused ones. I think the one that I actually really worked for me was I did something kind of locally. I live in Edinburgh. There was a thing here where some actors had organized business sessions where they were trying to transfer acting skills about how to project and how to present into the business community. And I did kind of three or four classes with them and it was amazing. It was really good. A lot of those acting techniques, and some of them were the physical aspects of it. How do you make sure your voice projects? How do you stay relaxed? How do you stop yourself getting tense? As well as how do you prepare and how do you, you know, talk out loud during preparation. And that was absolutely invaluable to me. And that's much more just about the raw skill of presenting as opposed to necessarily the CEO job of also kind of leading and messaging and some of those other points. But really, really useful. Yeah, so yeah, to answer it, I have worked on it quite a bit. And I've still got a long way to improve.
No, I think that's so interesting because I think a lot of people would never think to take, like you've mentioned, like the word actor came in there and you'd think, well, I'm not doing that. I'm not like trying to present on like live TV or things like that. So I suppose people don't even think of that as an option. So it's actually very interesting to hear kind of what you've done to help.
Yeah, those guys are the expert. If you think about it, you know, newsreaders, you know, journalists, actors, they are absolutely the experts. They are 10 times better than your average CEO. They do it for a job. They do it day in, day out. And I'm a big believer in kind of learning from people who are very good at something.
Yeah, I feel like I need to do them courses because I remember when I was in school, this is a bit of a side note, but I remember when I was in school, I used to be really bad at presenting, like really bad. And my weak points were I'd go bright red, I would end up laughing and I would stumble or like stutter on all my words. And I remember one time I was trying to present and I got kicked out of the lesson. Like my teacher thought I was just having a laugh and like being silly, but I was genuinely like, I can't present. So I feel like everyone makes their way a long time. I mean, I'm surprised I can do these okay sometimes. You know, like we've all grown.
Yeah, absolutely. You do them very well.
Oh, thank you. So I've got a question for you. Do you think that most CEOs know kind of when they've lost the room? Have you ever experienced that yourself? If you've like...
Yeah, absolutely. I have, you know, and interestingly, so my experience is kind of obviously at WorkCast, I've done a fair amount of this. But the bigger things that I did were in the US with, you know, much larger audiences. And you know, you have to remember sometimes, depending on the message that you're pushing, that audience's initial reaction can be, you know, they may not be waiting for your wisdom to come out and listening to every moment of it. You know, people can be cynical. You're sometimes going into a situation where maybe a company's been acquired, which is something I've done. where you then are standing up on behalf of another organization and making that work. So you're going into a hostile situation. So it's very easy to lose that room. And quite often you've lost it before you even go. So what you're actually trying to do is recover the room.
Oh, okay.
You know, so you can walk into a fairly hostile situation expecting a fairly tough ride. And actually the goal is to try and pull them back slightly. I think though, you know, this is sometimes the issue is we set ourselves up for failure because we, you know, walking into a hostile room after something like a merger or an acquisition, it's always going to be difficult. People are always going to be anxious. People are always going to be nervous. And it shouldn't really be down to that moment in time to pull that message off. I think it's about the preparation to that. So I think there's a lot of techniques you can bring before that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not about just presenting everything you do. I think it's about pulling questions from the audience before you start. So using that as an example in a merger and acquisition situation, I think I've actually been doing quite a lot of reading recently from Brad Jacobs, who is a serial entrepreneur in the US. And he has a very structured approach to communications, and there's a lot around that I really like. But a lot of his points are, you know, in that type of situation, you want to be giving that group that you're going to present to the opportunity to get their questions out early, to set their expectations, giving them the information before they turn up. So you're not surprising them and then asking them for questions, because you're not going to get great questions if you do that. So his kind of methodology is very much, you know, create the opportunity to crowdsource the questions. So everyone can contribute to the questions, upvote questions, whatever, depending on how big the audience is. Make sure they've got the meeting notes, not just the agenda, but actually what we're going to talk about through this session. So really the kind of raw information that you're dropping on people is out there.
Yeah.
Therefore, they're much more in a position to, one, listen to you because they're not trying to follow the key points, but also they've already asked some questions, and it's about responding and being as natural as possible and answering these questions in a meaningful way. You know, that's really, I think, the key to it is to make people really feel listened to rather than presenting a bunch of information at them. You can present information anyway, but you can't listen to people anyway, and you can't answer the questions anyway. So, you know, I mean, we do the same on our all hands events. We, you know, I try to follow that kind of structure where we take questions in advance. And they are blind, and they're genuinely blind. I never see those questions, and we have had points in the past, particularly where there's been some really brutal ones in there, and you just got to roll with it, really. But I think that kind of, so it's not really just about the, you know, for this 40 minutes, I'm going to talk at you and then walk away. I think it's about the run up, that kind of couple of days before. Has everyone got the notes? Has everyone had the opportunity to crowdsource questions? Have they really felt those questions are anonymous? Is there a mechanism, you know, so if you're doing it in a physical room, is there a mechanism for people to ask questions that they're confident with? Can they submit them by a text rather than someone roving around with a microphone and a camera? You know, a lot of people don't want to do that. And I think if you do that, you get the same type of people. If you want to give everyone a voice, you need to provide simple ways for them to submit questions, both pre and during the live event. Sorry, I was just going to say, I also think polling, so an online event particularly, but you can do it in a physical venue as well. I think polling is a really good way to engage the audience and bring them in. So, you know, the best scenarios are people can answer questions on from their phones and say, yeah, this is what I think about this. So you're kind of pulling questions, but you're also pulling sentiment from the audience. And it's that, I think the key point is, are you listening to them?
For sure. And I think that you mentioned two things there that we actually discussed on our previous podcast as well, which is the asking of questions prior to the meeting is such an essential thing to do for both you and the people in the meeting. I think that's a really, really good point. And I feel like having that also would, I'm assuming this by the way, but helping you as someone who's going to lead that meeting, it helps you, I suppose, structure the meeting as well. And that's what turns it from feeling like a, going back to the initial question of you people, when they're in front of a large audience, then can't do it, they struggle. is it because they haven't got that structure in place beforehand via the questions, and they're confident that what they're talking about is exactly what the audience are like wanting to hear as well? Does that make sense? I feel like I've asked that really weirdly.
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, I think it comes back to that, you know, so preparation and presentation. I think it's, you know, the slight risk of answering the question the same way as the first question we talked about. I think you're just putting a CEO under enormous stress to expect them to walk in and carry the room. And it's unnecessary, I think, is the point. You're kind of setting, I always feel CEOs are set up for failure in these communication situations, because, you know, the leadership team will throw a bunch of stuff that they want to get out there at the CEO and kind of make it their job to present it to everyone, but not just present it, to win the hearts and minds, to win the battle. And that's just, it's never a point in time situation. You know, it's about that long-term communication. It's not about the one town hall event. It's about the ongoing campaign of town hall events and making sure that the message has been put through all of these things and not surprising people. The town hall is important because it's an opportunity to see and understand and get to know each other. But it shouldn't be an opportunity where you suddenly need to make thousands of people believe your vision and come charging with
first
you.
First time battle. Hearing stuff. Yeah,
that's important, but it shouldn't be the kind of all tried to be delivered in that period. It should be the culmination, should be that, you know, we are together, we are walking into this situation and we're going to fight together for success. But it shouldn't be, here's the plan, here's where we're going, we're going to do it now, let's go. That's all too much.
Yeah, no, and I think you do that really well. I think, like, we have our annual meeting every year where we all get together and we hear kind of like the vision and exciting stuff we've got coming up, and it's always great to hear. But I think what you do really well as well is you do kind of like emails that go out regular, and you give us like kind of updates along the way as well, so nothing ever feels kind of like, oh, you know, like, where's that come from? Like, I feel like everything's always very clearly kind of done throughout. I think it's really good.
Let's be honest here. We have a monthly email plan, Emma, and it never goes out monthly. And I apologize for that.
I'm struggling to remember when the last one was, but we like the goal. It's fine. Perfect. So I suppose if losing the room is the problem, what does kind of like getting the room, like, you know, if you've like absolutely smashed it, because I feel like we can all recognize a bad meeting when someone's not done very well, but what do you feel like a great one looks like?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think often people measure it by the number of questions that they have coming in there and then in the room. I think that's often seen as, you know, we had a great presentation, we got a big round of applause, and then there was lots of questions. And I think if you ask most people, they would say that was a successful event, which, you know, to be fair, it's certainly a good indicator. But I think what actually happens in that situation is the most confident and often the senior people who are trying to be noticed through company growth are the ones asking the questions. And they will typically ask not very challenging questions. So everyone else is watching this situation and going, hold on, you know, the head of this team has just asked a really nice friendly question to the CEO who's been able to answer it. But actually everyone else is seething with hundreds of other questions under the surface. And it's about giving them the voice. And you can see situations where, you know, the two extremes kind of happen. I think somebody who is asking questions, who, just as I've talked about, is, you know, wants to be noticed, wants to be seen. And the other problem you get is the person who is most disgruntled in the organization chooses this as the opportunity to voice that frustration 2 weeks before they leave and take another job. And I think what you're aiming for is, how do you get the voice from the core? Yeah. So just as you, I know, have talked about in your prior podcast, I think polling is a great mechanism to do that. You know, asking questions in a text form, really powerful. I think polling is also really powerful there. Another area that's not used enough, particularly in these kind of online events, is pre-recording content. So, and the advantage of pre-recording content is you can kind of package it a bit more elegantly and a bit more succinctly. So rather than, you know, me ramble on for a while, I can actually record something, edit it down slightly so it's short, succinct, and hits my key points. And that's maybe more answering your original question about you know, not setting CEOs up for failure. CEOs who have challenges presenting, as we all do, that is a great trick because you take an awful lot of pressure off yourself. Now, what it does take is organization, because, you know, a few days before, you need to be organized enough to have your content and have your messages, pre-record it, edit it down. And then there's a multitude of things you can do from that point. You can stream it back as though it were live and then still do live Q&A, which I think is my preference. You're not trying to pretend it's not live, but you are just following what newsreaders and news channels do. They have a pre-recorded segment and then they discuss it. They don't say, hey, we're going to do a live broadcast for the next hour and we're just going to wing it. You know, they're professionals. They don't do that. Yeah, that's right. So they will pre-record their interviews. They'll pre-record their content. They'll have their nice graphics lined up. And then they will have a live discussion. And I think that, to me, is what the gold standard looks like. And I think that goes some way to answer the original question, which is, you know, not all CEOs can be incredible presenters. Most can't, because they're very good at other things. They're, you know, they bring other skills. That's not their core skill set. So be kind to yourself, be kind to your leadership team, be kind to your audience by pre-recording it, get all your messages out, edit it down so it's succinct, it looks professional, and then stream it back as though it's live, and be honest about that, and then do live Q&A. And another alternative, actually, with that, in the spirit of getting the content out, is to distribute that as on-demand content in advance, and then do a live Q&A only. So you're not expecting people to sit and watch your presentation, but you're also not expecting your CEO or your leadership team to present live in front of the whole, you know, it's a very difficult and job-threatening situation to do that. So pre-recording is another great way of kind of hitting your messages and also being confident in what you're doing.
I love that. I love that whole section that you've just said. That was really, really good and really, really helpful, I think. And I think that's it. It's like having alternative ways to get your message across. And if pre-recording takes the pressure off speaking in front of that audience live, it just means it's not fake. It just means you're making sure that your points are hit. You've got the message clear, you know what you're saying. And I think it's a really good way to do it. You know, I would struggle personally as a CEO to make sure I got all the messages across in one go. So it's a great way to make sure that's done correctly.
Yeah, and that's hitting your messages, I think, is really important. And, you know, the easiest way to hit your messages is to have your slides with all the messages. But then actually, from a presenting point of view, it's pretty boring because you're going, you know, this is what we're going to do about HR. Mm-hmm. This is what we're going to do about sales. And then it becomes kind of dull. Whereas I think the alternative to that is you do it a bit more freely. But I found often that I think I've done quite a decent presentation. And then I realized, hold on, I had 10 points to make and I missed three. And now I've not said those at all. And that's a significant issue. So yeah, pre-recording is a great way to try and get that quality up, to take pressure off the individuals and go from there. I think there's also a kind of secondary point, which is how do you pre-record in a way which is not pressured in itself? You know, sometimes if you bring in a whole bunch of video cameras and set them up with lighting, equally that can be quite nerve-wracking. So getting that balance between, you know, so either a remote pre-record, you know, webcam-based pre-record as we're doing just now, or you know, simple studio things, an environment the CEO is comfortable with or the leadership team are comfortable with, depending on what you're doing. And that can be anything from, you know, an internal employee with a couple of decent cameras. It can be an online recording using Zoom, Teams, Workcast, something else. But there's lots of ways to get that content, and it's probably a discussion in a, you know, podcast in its own right. Mm-hmm. Of how do you capture that content well and succinctly?
Yeah, and it's interesting you're going down kind of like the formatting route and how it is that you get that done, because I feel like something that I was going to mention on the podcast is kind of like the format does get ignored sometimes. I feel everyone focuses on the person themselves, but no one actually looks at kind of whether it's the structure, if it's the platform, if it's how it's being delivered, that is actually setting the leadership up to fail. Do you know what I mean? Like, that is kind of like, it might not necessarily be the person, but more just like the way it's, the structure it's used in. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do very much. And, you know, I see it very regularly. CEOs who have never used a particular solution, you know, literally being dropped in 3 minutes late. More often than not, they say 3 minutes late to start. The audience is sitting there waiting to build up this pressure. You know, all of these points are ways to fail. So, you know, I think lack of planning or lack of time, I think, would probably be the pushback I would get by saying lack of planning. You know, often things can move very quickly, and often these types of sessions are put together because there is a big change. So they see, you know, if it's a acquiring a company is a good example, I think. You know, if your company has just acquired an organization, they're not allowed to communicate that typically in advance. So you suddenly have this concertina timeline where they have to announce it all, they have to keep everyone on side, they have to get everyone on board from both organizations, and they're kind of turning up with a message that's only half baked at that point. So I think, you know, preempting some of those situations is also a good direction. You know you're going to have to communicate, so how do you get on the front foot with that communication and not just push the leadership team through a very difficult, you know, live expectation? So things move quickly, I think, is the point. And, you know, doing that as professionally as you can with as much planning as you can makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And I think what you do really well, from our, if I go think of our kind of like yearly all hands meeting, I feel like you get a lot of people involved as well. It's not like an hour to 2 hours of just you talking at us. Like, I feel you get other departments involved and let them have their section and their updates and stuff like that, instead of you trying to do it all. Yeah. Have you ever seen, or do you know of people who do try and do it all, and it's kind of, that's maybe why it's not working? Is that?
Yeah, I think that is one of the points. So just, you know, we do a kind of annual big all hands, but we have a quarterly get together, which is kind of similar. We just don't call it by the same name. But I mean, for me, what I'm often trying to do is bring the leadership team in to do as much of that heavy lifting as possible. You know, it's the way to divide, it's the way for everyone to get to know each other much better. And I think that understanding what other teams are doing, I think the slight difficulty with that is you can just end up with a procession of, you know, once you get to the point of everyone gets the 5 minute slot, it can then be pretty monotonous. So I try and lean into which teams are doing something interesting and exciting that's relevant. You know, the kind of job as normal, you can send out by email communications, you can record some content and send out a quick 3 minute snippet of that. So I think it's, I'm not saying that's irrelevant, but I think for these live situations, it is better to focus on the, you know, this team are doing something that everyone would be interested in, so let's get them up. So it's not like everyone gets a shot every time. It's like, this team's doing something really exciting that we'd like to know about, so let's focus on that, is the way I try and do it. I'm not saying that's always correct, but that's the way I've tried to do it.
Brilliant. Love that. So kind of looking at, if you are like thinking of from an internal comms manager, and your CEO in that question is brilliant one-to-one, but then when they're at scale, they're boring apparently. What do you actually do? Like, because you can't exactly send them a feedback form to say, you know, that was really boring, didn't enjoy that. So what's your advice in terms of like what they can do?
I mean, sometimes a bit of honesty, I think, does go a long way. So, you know, don't find out when you put the scenario, I guess, would be, you know, you have a new CEO coming into a company. You've kind of got two situations. You've got a CEO who's been doing it for a long time and it's been boring for a long time, or you've got a new CEO coming into take on an organization and then putting themselves in, so you don't really know. I think it is always good with not just CEOs, you know, entire leadership teams and really everyone in the company, when you get the chance, of give people the chance to get in front of cameras, to get on the stage, to build up to these things. So I think before you put a CEO in front of the entire audience, you don't just say, hey, are you happy doing this? Because the only answer from the CEO is yes, really. It's much more, you know, how much have they done? and doing a rehearsal where you just get a chance to watch them in action. I think cameras are a good idea. You know, there's nothing like a reasonably good looking camera with a bunch of lights in your face.
Oh, you're going to say a good looking CEO. It's nothing better.
I have no experience of that, to be fair.
Oh, well, that's where you were going with that. Sorry.
A really good camera, you know, and some lights to kind of just see how people perform in that situation. So pre-recording generally is something I'm a big fan of, but it also, I think, can be a bit of test the water. You know, if you have, and you don't need to be a video production expert to do this. You just need to have a half decent camera on a tripod. You can do it with a decent webcam if need be. But the point being is you're setting it up and you are deliberately filming these individuals. And through that process, 9 times out of 10, you get a really good sense of who can and who can't present. And then I think the other one is who can stay calm in these situations. Because the other thing that causes people to not present well is they just get flustered and it goes wrong at that point. So I think looking at those two things rather than, you know, specifically setting them up and then afterwards have to retrench and say, well, actually, I don't want you back on stage because you were terrible, I think is the better option. And then I think, as with all things, using data, so polls is quite a good way of doing that. So if you ask the right polls in the right way, you know, was the content good? Did you enjoy the presentation? Did you find it was too long or too short? And just to remind you, Emma, we did do this exercise a couple of years ago and we massively cut it all hands down because I think we had been running to two and a half, 3 hours. Mm-hmm. So I think the feedback came back like no more than 40 minutes.
Yes.
So we've kind of gone for doing more, not necessarily full all hands, but more of these types of things, but keeping them really short, I think is good guidance. But I think take that data from your audience and that can be a nice way of presenting it back. If your entire company or 70% are saying, I find it monotonous and long and the presentation wasn't great, you just use the data to explain the situation.
Really good idea. And I feel like, do you know what my like little surprise was for this podcast? Because I did have a surprise for you and I feel like you already know it.
No, I don't. I genuinely don't know. Well, you said before I've got a surprise. So no, I didn't know you had a surprise and I don't know what it is. So we will see.
Oh. Well, speaking of form, so we, just to tell our audience, we had our own kind of strategy meeting earlier this week, and I knew this podcast was coming up, so I was like, do you know what I could do? I could do a little anonymous form and get some internal feedback on how on how our own CEO did.
Oh, my God.
Yes. So I sent it around, and I did get, like, loads of responses, but I thought I'd just kind of like randomly pick some of them that I was going to mention on here. So when you mentioned getting a form with feedback on, I was like, do you know my surprise? Does someone
No, that's funny. No, I had no idea of your surprise. I didn't know. Now I'm slightly nervous, but there we go.
Well, it was brutal, the responses I got back, you know. No, I'm joking. It was actually very nice. It was very nice. So my first question that I put on this like little survey was, one word to describe Stu's communication style during the strategy meeting. The best answers I got was engaging, honest, and effective.
Oh, wow. Okay. I'll take that every time.
I feel like you're going to walk off this podcast just feeling great because I found these responses were so nice. The second question I said was, what do you think Stu does really well as a communicator? We've got one of these answers is so funny. Gets his point across in a clear way and is ready to listen to any concerns.
Okay.
Includes everyone and addresses each department, which is what I said previously as well. I feel like that's something you are very good at, is getting everyone kind of involved.
We did do that. I thought we did that quite well, actually, as well, where we had, you know, a number of different departments were presenting. But actually, we went then at the end kind of went back and just said, I thought that did work quite well.
It gives
a chance to kind of pull questions out from about a specific team or about a specific presentation. So that's good.
Yeah, no, I thought that was good. And I remember we went around the first time each department and like marketing was mentioned, but I didn't really speak. And then when you went back around again, you then got other people involved, because then I started speaking more about marketing on the second round. And if you hadn't have done that, then I probably wouldn't have spoke up. So
I've not done that specifically like that before, and I did think it worked quite well. So I'm glad there was some good feedback. I'm waiting for the terrible feedback, the stinging the tail of the surprise that's coming.
Well, someone said good at selling.
Okay.
But I'm not sure. I'm good at selling, apparently. Another question was, if you could say one thing to Stu about his communication style that you think he would not expect to hear, what would it be? Someone said unique. I'm thinking unique, ambitious, and open to listening to different perspectives, and keeps an open mind on possible solutions to problems.
I would, that's things I would like to think I do, or I try and do anyway.
Okay. And it says, any other comments? And it says, pastries were yummy.
The pastries were yummy too.
They were yummy. But no, it's just kind of, it's kind of funny to kind of go on to your point about doing them forms afterwards. Like, this was just a fun one for the podcast, but I know in the past you have done one that's asked more honest questions about how you found the meeting, and you do then take that data and restructure it, which is such a great idea to do, because then you know what works and what doesn't, and what's been received well and what's not. So I think it's a great point you made earlier.
Yeah, I think all of these things come together, as we've really kind of talked about. The presenting bit is one part of it, but actually it's the build up to it and the opportunities for people to ask questions and share information, crowdsourcing those questions, and the post event, you know, sending out recordings, sending out snippets, getting feedback in poll form. And I think it's a cycle you're trying to build, you know, and then you do it all mm-hmm. over again. But maybe it's not an all hands for this one. Maybe it's a webinar that you do internally, a webcast around the team, and it's just mixing all that up, but having this momentum, you know, cadence to the whole process, I think is the goal. But it's a huge challenge for all organizations. And I think the best organizations, really do make that their virtue and unite entire teams behind it and, you know, drive to success. And that's ultimately the goal that we're trying to do.
Yeah. And I think we have to be kinder to CEOs. Like, they're busy doing other stuff, you know, like they're presenting isn't kind of the major skill set that's required when there's like so much other stuff. And I feel, you know, if one-to-one they're brilliant, they're that, you know, take that as they are brilliant. And sometimes I think the, like, it's just the message that's being delivered sometimes isn't always going to be the most exciting thing. I mean, you know, it's going to be data and the odd graph here and there and stuff like that. You know, sometimes it isn't always the most interesting topic. So it's not necessarily the person. Do you know what I mean?
That's right. You know, it's a challenging thing. You're trying to get, you know, lots of people aligned in the same way. Mm-hmm. You're trying to infuse them. That's a complex thing, and it's not a straightforward, you know, and it's going back to your point about if somebody's great in a one-to-one and they're not great in these bigger situations, then, you know, change the problem rather than doing all hands with everyone. Why don't you break it into, you know, do 10 smaller presentations and try and, you know, play to their strengths. I think CEOs are different, or leadership teams generally bring different skill sets, and you've got to play to the strength of what you've got. So if somebody's great in a one-to-one, maybe record them in a one-to-one and then send it out, and, you know, use those kind of tricks to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the best way to do it. It's like, play to your strengths. Absolutely. I think that's the best way to do it. And try switch up the format. You know, if you find that your slides are too graph heavy, can you change them and try and make the format and structure of your meeting a little bit different? But I think we've made some great points along the way, Stu.
I think you've hit a good one there, actually, going back to that circulating information in advance. And I have to admit, this is not something I've done well enough yet, but it's something I'd like to work on. I think circulating the graphs as a paper beforehand and then not bringing them up on slides every 2 minutes, but actually just referencing them, is a much better way of doing kind of heavy data points. You know, certainly if it's data that you're happy sharing, and realistically, if you put it on a slide, you're happy sharing it because it's very easy for people to take it and run with it. So, so I think as soon as you know, circulating that content in advance, and I think it's the data heavy content is the stuff to circulate.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So I would say the kind of key takeaway from today is it's not about whether your CEO is a good communicator, but I would say it's more whether the format gives them the best chance to be one. I feel like it's the kind of like the key takeaway from that. Would you
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's about thinking about your whole communications program and then leaning in, you know, and that should involve, you know, emails, it should involve pre-recording content, it should involve live, it should involve physical get-togethers, you know, mid-sized meetings, but then leaning into those that you are, that the leadership team and the CEO are strongest at. So if they're a great presenter, yeah, do lots of big presentations. If they're a terrible presenter, do lots of pre-records in a kind of one-to-one situation, but then circulate them widely. I think that's right. Lean into the strengths, absolutely.
Brilliant. Perfect. Well, honestly, it's been great having you on here. Thank you so much for your time. I feel like the points we've made have just been really, really, really helpful. And what I'll do is I'll put kind of a slide together with all of the key takeaways we've listed off, just so visually you can have it at a glance, a nice kind of key takeaway slide. We did that on the last episode, which I think was quite helpful. And if you do want to find out more about how Workcast structures internal communication events that give leadership the best possible chance to lead these meetings, head to the link in the resources section, because we do have a link directly to our landing page for that. We will have another episode coming out very, very soon. So keep an eye out for... Oh, sorry. He did that on the last one. I feel like he likes his time to shine. But yeah, we've got another episode coming out very soon. So just keep an eye out on any promo for that. This one will be made available on demand as well. So if you need to watch back when you want, feel free. So until then, Stu, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
And thank you, audience, for watching, and we will see you soon. Bye.
Bye.